This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
And with that, U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris is officially the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. She urged Americans to seize a precious, fleeting opportunity to move beyond political divisions and the threat of Republican Donald Trump on Thursday. She closed out the Democratic National Convention. Meanwhile, in the U.S. state of Arizona, her rival, former President Donald Trump, visited the border to highlight immigration, as Democrats accuse him of sabotaging progress. In a speech, Trump blasted Vice President Harris for ending construction of the border wall, allowing migrants to cross into the U.S., and highlighting crimes committed by a handful of migrants.
We have a Marxist that's running, and I don't think you can let her. This country is not ready for a Marxist president. She will never build the wall. She doesn't want to build the wall. She's only saying if she changes her mind, it's only because she wants to get elected, because who wouldn't want to have a strong border? You need strong borders and strong elections, and we have neither.
Again, former U.S. President Donald Trump. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made his first visit to the border area where his forces launched their surprise offensive into Russia 2 weeks ago. During that visit Thursday, he said Kyiv's military had taken control of another Russian village and captured more prisoners of war. While in the northern Sumy region, Zelensky said the new POWs from the Russian region of Kursk would help build an exchange fund to swap for captured Ukrainians. He did not name the newly captured village. More at VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. Palestinian health officials say that Israeli strikes have killed at least 16 people in the Gaza Strip. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital received the bodies, which were counted by an Associated Press reporter, and included the remains of a woman and three children after strikes overnight and into Thursday. The Israeli offensive launched in response to Hamas's October 7th attack has killed more than 40,000 Palestinians in Gaza, according to the local health ministry, which does not say how many were militants or civilians. And Hamas and other militants killed some 1,200 people, mostly civilians, in the October 7th attack and abducted around 250. About 110 hostages are still inside Gaza, a third of whom are believed to be dead. Venezuela's Supreme Court, or Supreme Justice Tribunal, on Thursday ratified President Nicolas Maduro's victory in the July 28th presidential election, sealing institutional backing for the ruling party as the disputed contest fades from international headlines. Reuters correspondent Freddie Joyner.
On Thursday, Chief Justice Carislia Rodriguez said the Supreme Tribunal had reviewed material from the Electoral Authority and that Maduro's win was valid. The opposition party, however, says the Supreme Court has no constitutional right to carry out any electoral functions, making its ruling null. The opposition, led by Edmundo Gonzalez, had published election results which gave him 67% support. The Electoral Authority said Maduro won just over half of the votes, but has not published full tallies. Many Western countries have urged full publication of the results. Thursday's Supreme Court ratification gives Maduro, who took office in 2013, another six-year term starting in January.
Reuters' Freddie Joyner. Sudanese Health Minister Hatem Mohamed Ibrahim said on Wednesday the country has recorded nearly 600 cholera cases since allowing a cholera outbreak in an epidemic on July 23rd. More from Reuters' Alice Rizzo.
Here is Sudanese Health Minister Hatem Mohamed Ibrahim.
We have sent investigative and monitoring teams to identify the locations that are contagious, the water in some places, and the drinking from the ponds. We have distributed chlorine with the help of UNICEF and the World Health Organization, and we have opened treatment and isolation centers in several neighborhoods in Kassala and Al-Qadarif states.
The country is also suffering the world's largest hunger crisis, with some 25.6 million people suffering acute hunger, and the healthcare system is in disarray due to the lack of access to aid in many of the country's provinces.
Reuters' Alice Rizzo reporting. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Confident Voice of America. I'm James Barkley, Washington. Today's Friday, August 23rd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Vice President Kamala Harris accepts the nomination of the Democratic Party.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination.
We'll have analysis of her speech and other speeches on the day four of the Democratic National Convention. Experts call for more funding for African agriculture. Peace talks between the DRC and Rwanda are scheduled to resume sometime this week. Liberian police descend on opposition CDC party headquarters.
The Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency was executing a search and seizure warrant in the same vicinity of the CDC headquarters in a place called Small Town along the beach.
And an Afrobarometer survey says that young Africans prefer democracy to any authoritarian alternative. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vice President Kamala Harris has officially accepted the nomination of the Democratic Party and will take on former President Donald Trump in the November 2024 elections. She did so Thursday night, the fourth and final day of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago.
Let me start by thanking my most incredible husband, Doug, for being an incredible partner to me, an incredible father to Cole and Ella. And happy anniversary, Dougie. I love you so very much. To our President Joe Biden. When I think about the path that we have traveled together, Joe, I am filled with gratitude. Your record is extraordinary, as history will show, and your character is inspiring. And Doug and I love you and Jill and are forever thankful to you both. And to Coach Tim Walz, you are going to be an incredible vice president. And to the delegates and everyone who has put your faith in our campaign, your support is humbling. We are all in this together. And every day in the courtroom, I stood proudly before a judge and I said five words: Kamala Harris for the people. And to be clear, my entire career, I've only had one client, the people. And so on behalf of the people, on behalf of every American, regardless of party, race, gender, or the language your grandmother speaks, on behalf of my mother and everyone who has ever set out on their own unlikely journey, on behalf of Americans like the people I grew up with, people who work hard, chase their dreams, and look out for one another. On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
Vice President Kamala Harris speaking Thursday night, the final day of the Democratic Party National Convention in the Midwestern U.S. city of Chicago. The final night of the convention witnessed an array of speakers, including governors, celebrities, and just ordinary Americans. The Reverend Al Sharpton of the National Action Network led the crowds in chants of "We Won't Go Back," as he invoked the name of Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to be elected to the United States Congress.
Tonight we are going to realize Shirley Chisholm's dream. 52 years ago, I was one of the youth directors in her campaign for president. And 52 years after she was told to sit down, I know she's watching us tonight as a black woman stands up to accept the nomination for President of the United States. We have fought too hard for women to be told to get out of the kitchen. We are now on our way to the Oval Office. We won't go back. We fought hard for LGBTQ loved ones to get out the closet. We won't go back. We fought hard for the right to choose, the right to education. We suffered and died and bled, went to jail to get the right to vote. We won't go back.
The Reverend Al Sharpton of the National Action Network speaking Thursday night at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Joining us live now is from Cambridge, Massachusetts, is Robert Rodberg, adjunct professor of public policy and director of the program on intrastate conflict at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. Good morning to you, Professor.
Happy to talk, yes.
Thank you very much for joining us. But what, Professor, what do you make of Vice President Kamala Harris's speech tonight?
Well, she just finished, and towards the end, she followed the Biden accepted force on Ukraine and Gaza and spoke extremely strongly about what she would do as president. Her most important comment was that she would respect Palestinian rights. That's something which slightly separates her from what Biden has been pursuing. She joined him, of course, in searching for a ceasefire in the Gaza war, and that's, of course, a work in progress. She talked about the suffering of the people of Gaza and emphasized that. She was very strong on Ukraine as well, but the rest of the world she didn't talk about. She indicated that she was close to President Zelensky of Ukraine, and everything she said was extremely positive about her foreign policy ambitions, but she didn't really touch on most of the world.
I noticed that she invoked her previous job as a public prosecutor. I mean,
yes.
To what degree do you think that can help her in her, if she wins the election now, of becoming a stronger president?
Well, the most important thing is that she made it, tried to make it very clear, and did make it very clear to me that she doesn't give up. She believes in the rights of the underprivileged. She made a very good point of saying that her client was always the people, not the state. And so she made it clear that she's always on the side of the underdog. That speaks to domestic as well as foreign policy. But I think it's just clear that she understands what's at stake in the world, and she made it clear over and over that she's different from her opponent in the presidential race, who thinks only of himself and thinks of money making. She made it very clear that she's for the people, for the United States, and has no claims for personal gain on her own.
Professor, we thank you so much for joining us. Thank you very much.
Okay.
That was Professor Robert Rodberg, adjunct professor of public policy and director of the program on intrastate conflict at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. He was speaking with us from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Our reporter in Nigeria asked these listeners about the importance of the U.S. elections to Africa and their thoughts on a female presidential candidate.
I am Demi Oyewole from Kwara State, Nigeria. The United States election is crucial for Africa because the United States has significant influence on global politics and economy. A female presidential candidate is welcome, bringing fresh perspectives and potentially more empathy towards Africa's challenges. It shows progress and might inspire more women to take leadership roles in our own countries. A female president might adopt a more collaborative approach, benefiting Africa's development and international relations.
Well, my name is Choma Chinedum, and I personally believe that men are better candidates for the role of a president. Please do not get me wrong. Please, I'm a woman. And as a woman, I really, really do support and applaud women who achieve remarkable feats. But I strongly support having a male president, especially in a country like America. My reason is, you know, men are logical, but women, we are emotional. Most times, our emotions take the better part of us. So, but men are really logical. I am not trying to underestimate my gender, but I think a male president is better for a country like America.
The election's outcome can directly affect Africa, especially in terms of foreign aid and trade relations and international diplomacy. As for a favorite presidential candidate, it's a powerful statement for a gender equality and outgoing fight for women's rights globally. Seeing a woman leading a major political party in one of the world's most influential countries could inspire women and girls in Africa to strive for leadership roles challenging traditional gender norms. It reflects a growing global movement towards recognizing and valuing the capabilities of women in leadership.
The views of some Nigerians about this year's U.S. presidential election. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 23rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Liberian police raided the headquarters of the former ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC party, on Thursday, leading to a skirmish with party supporters. As Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia, several individuals have been arrested as calm is restored.
Liberians woke up on Thursday to the sound of gunfire, tear gas, and roadblocks near the headquarters of the opposition CDC. Businesses in the area shut down and pedestrians' movement impeded. Jala Nelson is the deputy director of operations of the Liberian National Police. He told VOA that the altercation began when the Liberian Drug Enforcement Agency, LDA, began a raid in the vicinity of the CDC.
The Liberia Drug Enforcement Agency was executing a search and seizure warrant in the same vicinity of the CDC headquarters in a place called Small Town along the beach. Accordingly, they met stiff resistance from some community dwellers, which led to a couple of them sustaining injuries, and then they fled the scene. Thereafter, at about 5:30, we got a distress call from road users that the roads were being blocked, especially the Tottenham Boulevard, specifically in front of the CDC headquarters, and our stones were being thrown at moving vehicles. And the police, being responsible for the maintenance of law and order, we had to move in. try to contain the situation.
However, CDC Secretary General Jefferson Kogi says the police statement is misleading and that it was the government's plan to attack the opposition. He says one opposition supporter was gunned down in the process.
What we say to you, it is a calculated cover-up. Those were FDA people who came here. Those were state-sponsored mercenaries. Our premises were invaded was as early as 3 to 4 a.m. in the morning. They also engaged into sporadic shooting. There were over 600 tear gas that was shot on our premises. Over 25 persons been incarcerated. And it's believed to know that one person has lost their life.
Addressing the press on Thursday, Information Minister Jerry Limick Pia said the government will not tolerate lawlessness.
A whole group of people just torment the rest of the country because of their own self-interest. So as we speak, the National Security Council of the country is meeting, and if you think what you're doing is a play thing, you're joking, because we will act and we will act decisively. As a former president, instead of being a state man, you allow your party headquarters to be used as a ground of tolerance.
Former President George Weah has told the local Front Page Africa publication that the police action violated peace and security of the country. The incident has generated mixed reactions from Liberians, with some saying the raid was untimely and have the potential to disrupt the peace that Liberia has enjoyed over the years, while others think the CDC is overreacting. For Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
Amid famine and food shortages across Africa, agriculture experts are meeting in Uganda to discuss ways to improve food security and nutrition. Experts from Vision Bloc, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, say governments must make deliberate efforts to increase funding for agriculture and must involve women and youth in the food supply chain. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakaringi has more from Kampala.
IGAD agriculture experts attending a three-day conference in Kampala denounced African states for failing to implement the 2014 Malabo Declaration, in which African nations agreed to commit at least 10% of the budget for food production. Collins Asimwe, who works with Uganda's Ministry of Agriculture, says the lack of funding for improving crops exposes African nations in the vicious cycle of poverty, famine and malnutrition.
In Uganda, we are 3 to 4%. Around there, we oscillate between 3 to 4%. So we think the politicians, the heads of government institutions, the heads of parliament and executive, to be able to deliver on that commitment, because it's lacking. And we know agriculture sector really employs the biggest population in most of these countries, in IGAD countries. So we need that commitment to be done.
Only a handful of African countries such as Rwanda, Morocco and Egypt are delivering their commitments to funding agriculture, according to the AU 2024 Barino Review Report. At 8.4% of the budget for agriculture, Ethiopia is on the right track to funding its food sector in the IGAD region. Other countries like Kenya lie at the bottom with about 2%. Asimwe says African countries must involve the biggest percentage of their populations, women and youth, in agriculture. Sylvia Henga, a food production expert with IGAD, agrees.
So it is time they're also included in leadership, in decision-making within the area. Now, when I go to the youth, it's not attractive to them, but we have modern technologies that can attract them. For example, digital climate agricultural systems. Another example is just soilless agriculture. We have soilless farming technology. We have aquaponics.
She says governments have to invest in eco-friendly technologies.
The IGAD region has been found to have certain important groundwaters that are actually shared across the borders. So it's time we are discussing with member states, how do we share these resources? How do we preserve this groundwater from pollution, for example?
She says African countries should remove trade barriers and also learn to share better practices. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The World Food Programme has announced the arrival of a rare convoy of humanitarian aid into civil war-torn Sudan via temporarily reopened border crossing with Chad. According to the French news agency, the AFP, the WFP trucks were carrying sorghum, legume, oil and rice for ground for around 13,000 people, threatened with famine in the Karinike region in western Darfur. Niger's capital, Niamey, has been almost completely cut off from the rest of the country by rising flood water following the heavy rains that have hit the Sahel region since June. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with athletics as Emmanuel Wanyonyi of Kenya went close to breaking David Rudisha's vaulted 800 meters world record in Thursday's Diamond League meet in Lausanne, Switzerland, in what was a mixed night for Olympic champions making their return after the Paris Olympic Games. Wanyonyi finished in a world-leading and personal best time of 1 minute 41.11 seconds in the non-official Diamond League meet. Wanyonyi repeated the blistering form that saw him win in the French capital, going within 0.20 seconds of the 1 minute 40.91 seconds world record set by Rudisha when winning Olympic gold in London in 2012. In other event, fresh from claiming the 200 meters win at the Paris Olympic Games, Botswana's Letsile Tebogo was unstoppable in the men's 200 meters as he overpowered his serial rivals. The newly crowned Olympic champion clocked a stunning 19.64 seconds to cross the finish line, first ahead of a stacked field of athletes who were out to seek redemption following the Paris Olympics flop. In the 800 meters women, Kenyan Mary Mora ran a dominant race to win the event. The world champion asserted herself on the race, taking control in the first lap before slowing it down only to sprint off in the final 200 meters to leave her rivals in her wake. Mora clocked 1 minute 57.91 seconds for first place ahead of Georgia Bell of Great Britain, who timed 1 minute 58.53 seconds, as Reki Jema, also from Britain, finished third in 1 minute 58.73 seconds. And now to football news. Moroccan attacking midfielder Anas Zarouri has signed a contract with French Ligue 1 side Racing Club de Lens, extending until 2028. The 23-year-old Moroccan international joined Lens after two successful seasons with Burnley in the English Premiership. In cricket news, England will play a men's test match against Zimbabwe next year. The one-off match, England's first against Zimbabwe since 2003, will take place at the Trent Bridge in Nottingham starting on May the 22nd. The England and Wales Cricket Board Chief Executive Richard Gold said welcoming Zimbabwe back for a men's test match will be a historic moment more than 20 years since their last visit. In basketball news, the semifinal pairings of the 2026 FIBA Women's World Cup pre-qualifiers taking place in Kigali, Rwanda are now set. The semifinals has turned into an Africa-Europe affair after following the departure of representatives from the Americas and Asia. The first semifinal will see Britain take on Hungary, while the late kickoff will see an all-African affair when Rwanda squared out against West African powerhouse Senegal. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend, and we will see you again on Monday morning.
The voice of America.
Washington, bye.